Lord incarnates as Mohinimurti. We will be reading texts 13 through 15. Ityabhivartam tasya akarnyasura pungava apramana vidastasyas tatatyetyanvamangsata atoposhya kritasna. Oh, sorry. Okay. Ityabhivartam tasya akarnyasura pungavaha apramana vidastasyas tatatyetyanvamangsata ityabhivartam tasya akarnyasura pungavaha apramanha vidastasyas tatatyetyanvamangsata. Iti thus Ahabhivyarhitam, the words that were spoken, Tasyaha, her, Akarnya, after hearing, Asura Pungavaha, the chiefs of the demons. Pramana Vidha, because they were all foolish. Tasyaha, of her. Tat, those words. Tata, let it be so. Iti, thus. Anva Mangsita, agreed to accept. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The chiefs of the demons were not very expert in deciding things. Upon hearing the sweet words of Mohini Murti, they immediately assented. Yes, they answered, what you have said is all right. Thus the demons agreed to accept her decision. And then the next two verses. Ato poshya krita snana hutpa cha havishanalam dhatpa go viprabhutebhya krita svastya yayana dvijay yato pajosham vasangsi paridhyaya hatanite kuseshu pravishan sarve prag agresva bibhushitaha. The demigods and demons then observed a fast. After bathing, they offered clarified butter and oblations into the fire and gave charity to the cows and to the Brahmins and members of the other orders of society, namely the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras, who were all rewarded as they deserved. Thereafter, the demigods and demons performed ritualistic ceremonies under the directions of the Brahmins. Then they dressed themselves with new garments according to their own choice, decorated their bodies with ornaments, and sat facing east on seats made of kusha grass. Purport. The Vedas enjoin that for every ritualistic ceremony, one must first become clean by bathing either in the water of the Ganges or Yamuna or in the sea. Then one may perform the ritualistic ceremony and offer clarified butter into the fire. In this verse, the words paridhaya ahatani are especially significant. A sannyasi, or a person about to perform a ritualistic ceremony, should not dress himself in clothing sewn with the needle. Om Agyana Timarandasya Gananjana Shadakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutade Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vanshakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Giradhar Srivasari Gaura Bhaktivinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I offer my respectful obeisances to the senior Vaishnavs, and I ask for your blessings and your permission to speak upon the Gaudiya Vaishnav Siddhanta as given to us by Srila Prabhupada and our Guru Varga. So we are continuing with the story of Mohini Murti incarnating and how the demigods and the demons, they cooperated together to get this pot of nectar, this Amrita, so that they could live forever. And it's very interesting to point out in these three verses today that the demigods and the demons cooperating, we see that the demons were engaging in Vedic culture. Usually when we think of demons or materialistic people, we don't hear that they offer clarified butter into the fire and give charity to cows and to Brahmins, and they cleanse themselves to perform ritualistic ceremonies under the directions of the Brahmins. Because in the previous canto, we heard about Hiranyakashipu wanting to destroy that Vedic culture. When he first took power, one of his first instructions was to actually go to those places where Brahmins were being protected, cows were being protected, and to burn those places down, to destroy that culture. Because if that culture is destroyed, then the rest of the people would naturally become godless and follow Hiranyakashipu, the demons. So in these verses, it talks about how the chiefs of the demons were not very expert in deciding things. And this goes for the materialistic person. When we speak about these asuras, asura literally means one who goes against the injunctions of God, one who goes against dharma. And so people are not very expert in deciding things that are for their own benefit, because they're covered over by the three modes of material nature. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. They're thinking that they're performing actions by themselves, but actually they're bound by these three ropes, these gunas, these three modes of material nature. And so they cannot actually decide things very well for them. And so this is why Brahmins are at the head of the society. Brahmins are in sattva-gun. They're in mode of goodness. And in that mode of goodness, they're able to direct the rest of society to perform activities that are for their best benefit, for their welfare. And the kshatriyas, they actually carry it out. And we should understand that actually Brahmins and kshatriyas, they're almost non-different. The only thing is that kshatriyas, they're the ones who actually carry out, seeing that the government or seeing that the people follow the rules and regulations set up by the Brahminical culture. The Brahmins, they're more or less performing for themselves and performing for others, but they don't take it upon themselves to see that the rest of the people are performing those activities. That's the kshatriya's duty. Kshatriya has that power to perform those activities to see that all the people are following Vedic culture nicely. So it's very interesting that we see that the demigods and demons performing these activities, but we understand that these demons are doing this because they want the amrita. It's not that they're very in the mode of goodness, that they're bathing themselves nicely, giving charity, going to perform the ritualistic ceremony of these Brahmins for anything good. They're actually wanting just to get the amrita. And we see with Hiranyakashipu, with Ravana, Kumbhakarna, these great demons, they actually followed Vedic principles. They performed austerities. They performed penances. They did Ashtanga yoga. They were celibate. They were kind to others. They performed all these activities that a Brahmin would naturally perform. But the demons did it so that they could gain power and so they could control other people. This is the difference. And so even in our own lives, as Vaishnavas, we perform rituals. But how we perform rituals is very different from how the Karmakandis, or those who follow karma and jnana, perform their activities. For instance, on Ekadasis, we fast from grains and beans to increase our chanting, to increase our smaranam, our remembrance of Krishna. We do that to increase our devotion. And those who follow the path of Karmakanda, they may follow Ekadasi, but they're doing it just to get rid of their sins. So there's a different mood of how we perform rituals. For instance, somebody might chant japa. But in their chanting japa, they just want to remove the sins. But for us, it's actually understanding that Krishna and his name are non-different. And so when we engage in that nam ras, in that chanting of the holy names, it's a completely different mood than how somebody else might chant japa under the karmakanda. So we see that demons, they might perform these different activities of ceremonies, ritualistic ceremonies, but it's for their own greed, it's for their own lust, and it's for them to gain their own power to hurt others in the long run. And even those who might perform ritualistic ceremonies as Brahmins, they might not be fully in love with Krishna. As we read in the 10th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, or Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book, we hear the pastime of the Yajnapatnis. The Brahmins were engaged in the ritualistic ceremonies, and Krishna and Balaram and the rest of the cowherd boys, they were very hungry, and they wanted something to eat. And so Krishna and Balaram, they sent the cowherd boys to go inquire to these Brahmins to see if they would give any alms to the cowherd boys to eat. And Krishna said, actually, you should say that it's for my brother Balaram, since he's a Kshatriya, I'm just a cowherd boy. So please go ask in the name of Balaram. And so when they went to go ask, these Brahmins who were performing these ritualistic ceremonies, they were performing ceremonies meant for the pleasure of God. And God sent messengers to ask to give some alms to them, and they ignored them. Oh, these little boys, what are they doing here? Just send them away. We're engaged in some very important activities here. Why are they bothering us? And so the cowherd boys went back, and Krishna said, okay, then go tell the wives of the Brahmins. And the wives of the Brahmins, you could see they had such natural love for Krishna. And this is Krishna actually wanting to allow them to serve him in this way. They immediately said, okay, what can we cook for Krishna? Never mind what we're doing. We drop everything Krishna is asking. This is our opportunity to serve Krishna. So even one may be considered a Brahmin, but completely miss the point of Krishna consciousness. So to be a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, this is very good, and it's very necessary for society to run according to Vedic culture. But at the same time, we can't miss the point. We can't get wrapped up in these bodily designations. Sarvopadi vinir muktam tat parat vena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti uchite. Bhakti, devotional service, automatically clears away these upadis, these false designations. And we see in this world, Sham Gopal and I, we just dropped Nam Kirtan off at the airport, and we were talking about how this world is so much up on this bodily concept of life. These upadis, these false designations. And from these upadis, so much disturbance in the world is arising. Archita Prabhu, yesterday he was talking about how this world is burning. He even mentioned that you have to be hidden away somewhere to not see that this world is on fire. You know, in California, 87% of the state is in extreme drought. Forest fires are going on in Northern California, burning. What to speak of so many protests, so many wars that are going on all around the world. Viruses popping up. There's so much suffering going on in the world. And Archita Prabhu was explaining how we have to give out these Srila Prabhupada's books. Because devotional service is that thing which will make everything auspicious. As we read in Nectar of Devotion, the second characteristic of pure devotional service is shubha. That which makes everything auspicious. The first is kleshagni, getting rid of all the suffering. And we see that Vaishnavas, they're very naturally happy. Even if they're so-called suffering, even if their body hurts, even if there's things that keep them down, we see amazing Vaishnavas like Svavas Prabhu, Naikatma Prabhu, Archana, all these great Vaishnavas, they keep going with their devotional service with such integrity that as junior devotees, we can learn so much from these senior Vaishnavas. And something that I read yesterday that I wanted to share also, just in these past couple of days of festivals and celebrations, but also remembering Srila Prabhupada's legacy of what he gave us. It's not such a small thing, this Krishna consciousness movement. Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna is ready to give you the world in 18 days. Just like he gave the world to the Pandavas. The Pandavas, they went through such suffering. And yet Krishna gave them the whole world in 18 days. So Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna is ready to give you the world in 18 days, but what will you do? You will sleep. So now we're in separation from Srila Prabhupada. In the movement, reading the Vyas Puja book, it was so enlivening because so many devotees that made their offerings, they were talking about how amazing it is that this movement is still growing. There's been so many hardships in this movement, in any movement that you want to start in this material world, there's going to be difficulties. But we can see that by placing Srila Prabhupada in the center of our lives, all those difficulties go away. Srila Prabhupada said that if you have any difficulties, think about me and I'll immediately kick them out. And in the fourth canto, chapter 28, text 47 in the purport, Srila Prabhupada talks about the separation. And it's talking about the queen lamenting. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, figuratively, the queen is to be the disciple of the king. Thus, when the mortal body of the spiritual master expires, his disciples should cry exactly as the queen cries when the king leaves his body. However, the disciple and spiritual master are never separated, because the spiritual master always keeps company with the disciple as long as the disciple follows strictly the instructions of the spiritual master. This is called the association of vani, words. Physical presence is called vapu. As long as the spiritual master is physically present, the disciple should serve the physical body of the spiritual master. And when the spiritual master is no longer physically existing, the disciple should serve the instructions of the spiritual master. So placing Srila Prabhupada in the center of this International Society for Krishna Consciousness movement, those of us who have not physically been able to be in the presence of Srila Prabhupada, we can have a deep relationship with Srila Prabhupada and never be separated from Srila Prabhupada if we serve the instructions of Srila Prabhupada. But to serve the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, we must know what the instructions are. And this is why we should read his books, listen to his classes, read his letters, see how he interacted with so many different devotees. Yesterday I was reading Giriraj Swami's Vyas Puja offering to Srila Prabhupada in the Vyas Puja book, and it was so sweet because the whole offering was about Yamuna Devi and how Yamuna Devi, she made Srila Prabhupada her life and soul. And she explained to him how she used to clean Prabhupada's quarters in Vrindavan. And she had a 5-step system going from the ceiling all the way to the floor, everything. She would clean it what we would think is perfect. She would clean the place immaculately. And even one time, one devotee, she would clean the three-tier cooker that Srila Prabhupada had. And one time, a person did not get all of the spots off. And Srila Prabhupada said, "This is not Vaishnav, this is Muslim." Vaishnav means not leaving any black spots on the pots. And so Yamuna Devi, she cleaned as well as she could, because you have to imagine, Vrindavan, it's very dusty, and the construction site was all around, so there's dust all over the place. But Yamuna Devi, she was cleaning like anything. Srila Prabhupada came in, and Srila Prabhupada said, "Yamuna Devi, haven't I taught you how to clean?" And Yamuna Devi very humbly said, "I haven't learned yet, Srila Prabhupada, I'm still learning." And Srila Prabhupada said, "Please clean my room." And he walked over to the stapler, and he picked up the stapler, opened it from its plastic, and there is dust on the side of the stapler where the hinge was. And this is Srila Prabhupada's instructions on how to clean. And for us to be clean, we have to clean our hearts, and then outwardly we'll be very clean. And so also in the Vyas Puja offering, Giriraj Swami, he told another pastime where Yamuna Devi, she would always sit at the very front of class when Srila Prabhupada would give class. And a certain sannyasi told her that, you know, when we're in India, you should kind of sit in the back. And so this is like the culture of India. And so she said, "Okay, I'll sit in the back." And she kind of became a little disturbed by this, because she would always sit up in the front. And after class and sometime later, Srila Prabhupada saw her. And he said to Yamuna, he said, "Yamuna, you didn't come to my class? You don't want to hear from me anymore?" And she just started crying. And at that moment, she realized that Srila Prabhupada would not be here anymore. And that like really struck her, that, wow, you know, I'm so attached to his physical presence, but how is it that I'm going to continue to serve Srila Prabhupada so intensely if his physical presence isn't here? And so she had that realization, that heavy realization, that she has to deeply attach herself to the Vani, to the words of her spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. And in the next purport, Srila Prabhupada also mentions that the main business of human society is to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead at all times, to become his devotees, to worship the Supreme Lord, and to bow down before him. The Acharya, the authorized representative of the Supreme Lord, establishes those principles, but when he disappears, things once again become disordered. The perfect disciples of the Acharya try to relieve the situation by sincerely following the instructions of the spiritual master. At the present moment, practically the entire world is afraid of rogues and non-devotees. Therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement is started to save the world from irreligious principles. Everyone should cooperate with this movement in order to bring about actual peace and happiness in the world. So, hearing from Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing from Srila Prabhupada, we have a great opportunity to not only perfect our lives, but to help others perfect their lives through so many means of prasadam distribution, book distribution, festivals. So many people coming to this temple, seeing the immaculate deity worship that was established by Srila Prabhupada. And so really getting in the mood of Srila Prabhupada's Vyas Puja and reading the Vyas Puja offerings of very senior advanced Vaishnavas, for us junior devotees, we should make it our point in life to try to absorb as much as possible Srila Prabhupada's mood, Srila Prabhupada's books, Srila Prabhupada's sadhana. We should try to absorb everything that Srila Prabhupada did so that we can emulate that, not try to imitate it, but emulate that in our own life and help others come closer to Srila Prabhupada. And then we can see that the world will become a much happier place. And somebody might say that, oh, that's very nice talk, but you can actually see the results of the Krishna consciousness movement. So I'll end there if there's any questions, comments, or corrections. So Mataji's question is, Balaram, I mentioned that Balaram was a Kshatriya, even though he used to go cowherding with Krishna. And it's seen that Balaram was born from Rohini and Vasudev. And so in the particular rasa, because Balaram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, he's not actually a Kshatriya or a Vaishya, but he takes on that role of a Kshatriya under his parent lineage, where in Vrindavan it was seen that Krishna was born from Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. Because in Vrindavan, they don't think that Krishna is born from Vasudeva and Devaki. They know that Krishna is born from Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. But Balaram is known as the brother of Krishna. But his parents were Vasudeva and Devaki. I mean, Vasudeva and Rohini.
So yeah, just on that point, in that pastime you refer to, where the Brahmins, the cowherd boys were begging from the Vedic Brahmins, and they were unsuccessful. Actually, I can't remember if it was before or after, but Krishna himself told the cowherd boys, don't ask in my name, ask in the name of Balaram, because you know I'm a Vaishya, they think Balaram's a Kshatriya.
Yeah.
So they may take that request more seriously. So Krishna himself was stating that, making that point.
Yeah. Bhakti and Dev.
Thank you so much for your class, Prabhu. What is the significance of clothes that are not produced by needle? You mentions that.
Well, in Chaitanya Charitamrita and in other places, Srila Prabhupada quotes from the Vedic literature on how somebody who wears sewn clothing on the altar will have to take birth as a worm or something like that so many times. But I don't know what that's in regards to exactly. I just know that Srila Prabhupada quotes it from the Vedic literature, but then we also see on how Srila Prabhupada allowed women who have saris to go on the altar. And so when I think it was Giraswami is speaking about principles and details yesterday, that this is a principle that Srila Prabhupada established, that those who can go on the altar, if they're wearing saris or sewn cloth, they don't get that reaction. So in the regard for today's purport, when it talks about not having clothing that's sewn by a needle, it's just a sign of purity. It's like natural clothing. It's not that which has been manufactured or, synthetically produced, but more natural.
Thank you. I was just thinking the other day, what is the time frame between the disciplic succession? Like, Srila Prabhupada is the 32nd to receive this knowledge, and it begins with Vyasadeva?
The disciplic succession actually starts with Krishna.
Krishna.
And Krishna, from our sampradaya, gives knowledge to Lord Brahma. Brahma to Narada, Narada to Vyas, Vyas to Madhvacharya, and then through Madhvacharya's descendants to Madhavendra Puri to Ishvara Puri, then Ishvara Puri to Lord Chaitanya to the six Goswamis to Srinivasacharya, Shamanana, Narottam Das Thakur, and then after Narottam Das Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Baladev Vidyabhushan, Jagannath Das Babaji, then Bhaktivinod Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Now, one can say that this is not the Pantaratrik Vidhi Guru Varg, but our Guru Varg is more of a Bhagavat Marg, that some of them were not direct disciples of each other. For instance, Jagannath Das Babaji's disciple was not Bhaktivinod Thakur in the sense of Diksha, but in Shiksha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji.
But as far as the time frame, like 32, within how many years would you say? This was just a question that somebody asked me, and I wasn't able to explain to them. Frame.
Maybe Archita will take the point.
There's not a fixed gap between one acharya and another. For instance, Vyasadeva is still on the planet. He's still preaching. Still spreading this knowledge. So it's not that they come and then they make a disciple and then they disappear. It's not like that. This is all on the transcendental platform. For instance, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta recognized Srila Prabhupada early on as going to be his successor. Now, so some people ask, well, did Srila Prabhupada designate? But he himself was asked that question, and Prabhupada said, that's not necessary. He said, I'm training them all to become spiritual master. So it's not that necessarily the next spiritual master comes out like some glowworm or something like that. It's all based on what his whole class was based on, following the instructions of the spiritual master. Those who follow strictly as disciples, then they become qualified to become guru. You can't become a guru if you're not a good disciple. So those who follow strictly, they can qualify to become guru. And it's not, again, necessarily that a direct disciple becomes the next acharya. It could be somebody who didn't take diksha from that person, as in the case of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Jagannath Das Babaji. Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually got diksha from someone else, but he took instruction, inspired by the instruction of Jagannath Das Babaji, and therefore it's considered that the knowledge came down in that way. But there are no fixed gaps, and there's no fixed circumstance. It doesn't work like that. It's not that, you know, some people are still looking, where is the next self-effulgent acharya in ISKCON? It's not necessarily like that. Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers didn't recognize that he was going to be the one. They didn't. And they were all pretty learned, many of them sannyasis, so it's not that they were idiots and foolish people on the street who just couldn't recognize. It's not always obvious who is going to be the next acharya. It comes out over time.
Jutta Karma Prabhu.
Specifically, I think the question was specifically about time. So if we look at Krishna, he at the beginning of creation, he's giving the knowledge to Brahma, who's the first created being in the universe. So the disciplic succession as we have it is from the beginning of the day of Brahma, or the Kalpa, when Brahma first takes birth, when the universe first comes into existence. Of course, before that, there was another universe, before that, another. But in the current creation cycle, the disciplic succession goes back to the beginning of creation, when Brahma, he's wondering about his whole situation. He goes into meditation and he gets the knowledge from Krishna that's recorded in Brahma Samhita. And then he communicates that to Narada. So Narada Muni is a being who, I mean, our lifetime is very short. We live for 100 years, but Narada Muni lives for, you know, his manifestation goes from the beginning of the universe to the end of the universe in this day of Brahma. And then 5,000 years ago, roughly, at about the beginning of the Kali Yuga, the end of the Dwapara Yuga, he gave knowledge to Vyasadeva. So it's not like a complete list of everything that's happened, but the disciplic succession goes back to the beginning of the day of Brahma, which is about 2 billion years ago, according to our calculation. And then goes from Krishna to Lord Brahma at the beginning of creation, then to Narada Muni, who's also there at the beginning of creation. And then he keeps that knowledge and communicates it to so many people. But 5,000 years ago, he communicated the knowledge to Vyasadeva, who recorded it in Srimad Bhagavatam. And then the disciplic succession goes down from there to Lord Chaitanya about 500 years ago and now down to us.
Jai. Bhrigupati Prabhu.
I have a question about something Judah Kama was just saying. So does that pastime of Krishna enlightening Brahma happen at the beginning of each day of Brahma or just at the beginning of his lifetime? Once at the beginning of his lifetime, 150 trillion years ago now, I would imagine, because he's halfway through his life.
I can't give you a Shastric statement, so I'll have to say I don't know. It appears to me that he gets enlightened at each creation because it says, you know, it is in the Bhagavatam that he gets instructed to do create everything as it was before, you know, in a previous creation. So it would seem he has to get the knowledge at the beginning of each day of Brahma because it said, because he's talking about making it as it was before. That's in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's as much as I can give you from Shastra at this point.
Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.